Well, good morning, everyone. If you're watching online, I'd like to ask a favor. If you could just throw into the chat section how the volume of the speaking microphones are. We've been dealing with some challenges and trying to get some things fixed in that online platform. They say the music is fine, but the spoken word not so much. So if you could throw something in chat-wise to let us know how the volume is and all that, that way we have kind of a instant feedback on that. Also, it was a little over a year ago that we sat, those of us that were here, and we prayed for the nation of Ukraine as it had been invaded by Russia. A year later, that war still rages on. And so I want to remember to continue to pray for the Ukrainian people and the nation of Ukraine as they go through that as well. Brian Harmon, dude, happy birthday. 27? That's what we'll go with. Yeah, happy birthday. The wonders of Facebook, it pops up on your Facebook feed that today is Brian Harmon's birthday. So happy birthday to Brian. The meeting today afterwards too, just so you know, should be pretty straightforward, pretty simple, and all that. So those of you that can stay, we would love to have you stay. Members get to vote on certain things. If you're not a member and you still like to see some of the workings of how that meeting goes, we would love to have you stay and be a part of that as well. So it should be pretty straightforward and pretty easy meeting today. All right? We like easy meetings, right? All right, so we'll go with that. Okay, so this is the question from a parent. And understand that this is purely hypothetical situation. You look at your kid and you say, so, what happened on the test that you took earlier this week? Now, this is the response that you get from your child. And understand, this is purely hypothetical. So the reaction I just saw back there must mean the volume is good this morning. All right. So volume's good for everybody online. So this is the response that you get. Well, the teacher didn't cover the material on the test in class. And it wasn't on the study guide, and we weren't really given adequate time to review. And the day before the test, the teacher was gone, and the sub didn't have a clue how to help us prepare for the test. Plus, most of us remembered that she said it was going to be open notes and open book, and then it wasn't. And the lights in the room were a little bit dim. And I hadn't really slept well the night before, and so I was a little bit sleepy, and it was difficult to focus. And nobody else really did well on the test either. Now, again, purely hypothetical situation. As a parent, are you going to sit there and think that those things that were just told to you are legitimate reasons why your kid didn't do well on the test, or are you going to consider them to be excuses? Now, But before we're too hard on our hypothetical child who didn't do so well on the test, my guess is that there are things each of us have made excuses for and choices that we've made to do things that we shouldn't have done or to not do things maybe we should have done. My guess is that there's somebody here who at some point in time said they didn't get the project done at work because their coworker didn't get their part done on time. When in fact, you were the one that procrastinated the job. And you made an excuse that it was your coworker's fault. Or, again, sometimes we make excuses for things we do that we shouldn't do. My guess is that somebody here, and again, this is purely hypothetical, and purely hypothetical means this never happened in my home. Okay? My guess is that somewhere along the way, someone got mad and said, if you hadn't done what you did, I wouldn't have had to get mad. So the fact that I got mad is your fault, not my fault. You see, sometimes it's easy to make excuses. And sometimes it's easier to make excuses than to accept responsibility for our own decisions, our own actions, and our own choices. However, what we will discover, and most of you and most of us have lived enough life to realize, that for the most part, the general rule of thumb, it is far better to set aside the excuses, to accept responsibility, and figure out how to do what we know we should do, and to not do what we know we should not do. One of the most famous stories, or one of the most famous characters from the biblical narrative, is a guy by the name of Moses. And Moses' story is a story full of excuses. When God had Moses lead the nation of Israel, he was met with excuse after excuse after excuse as to why Moses shouldn't have to do this. But Moses' story of excuses makes a lot of sense to a lot of us. A lot of us can understand the excuses that Moses made. But a lot of us can also understand that when it comes time to do what God has told us to do, and we are clear about what it is that God has told us to do, it is set aside the excuses and go do what you know you need to do. Moses enters the pages of history at a time after the nation of Israel had experienced a huge famine. And as a result of the famine, the nation of Israel wound up living in the country of Egypt. Through the leadership of a guy by the name of Joseph, Joseph provided for the nation of Israel in Egypt during a time of famine. The nation of Israel got settled in the land of Egypt and began to grow and began to prosper. And Israel had a pretty good run in Egypt. After a period of time, a new king shows up on the scene in Egypt, and that king forgets everything that Joseph had done, forgot all about Joseph, forgot all about the good that had come from Joseph's leadership. And as the nation of Israel begins to grow, the king of Egypt and the people of Egypt begin to grow concerned that the Israelites are growing so much in number that they might actually revolt against Egypt and fight, or they might leave Egypt altogether and go back to their own land and live in a life of freedom. So this has been significant because the Israelites made up the biggest part of Egypt's workforce. So the king decides what he should do. The king was known as Pharaoh. So Pharaoh decides what he should do. And what he does is he decides to make the nation of Israel slaves. And he makes their workload even harder. And he continues to become more oppressive of the nation of Israel. And the nation of Israel, he gets so concerned about the population growth of the nation of Israel that he sends out an edict to the Hebrew midwives and says, when an Israelite baby is born, if it is a girl, you can let it live. If it is a boy, you must kill him. And this is the storyline. This is the scene of history that Moses enters the pages. Moses is born, and it is during this time when Moses is born that his mom places him in a basket and hides him in the reeds of the Nile River to protect her child from being killed by this law that had been implemented by the king, the Pharaoh of Egypt. Well, coincidentally, Pharaoh's daughter comes to the Nile River to take a bath, and she notices the basket in the reeds, notices that it's a baby, and she takes the baby, and she adopts this baby, Moses, as her own, and raises him in Pharaoh's household. Kind of an ironic twist. She has to find a Hebrew mom to nurse the baby that she's adopting as her own. Turns out that that it's Moses' mom that she has nursed. So Moses is raised in a Hebrew household for a period of time, and then when he no longer is required to nurse, then he goes and lives in the household of Pharaoh, the very Pharaoh who had ordered his death. So throughout this storyline, there are plenty of opportunities for people to make excuses. There are the Hebrew midwives could have made an excuse and said, you know, Pharaoh said that they have to be killed, so we have to kill them regardless of what we think or what we know is right. We have to do what Pharaoh said. Moses' mom could have found excuses and reasons to not hide the baby in the Nile. Pharaoh, his daughter, could have easily gone and said, hey, this is one of the Hebrew babies. He's under the certain age that we're required to kill him, and so I need to hand him over to the officials. And, I mean, it could have been all sorts of excuses in this storyline. But each and every person in the story chose to set aside the excuses, accept responsibility for their own choices, and do what they knew needed to be done. So, here's where we pick up the story. As Moses has transitioned from his Hebrew household to his Egyptian household, he's grown up. And here's where we pick up the story. It says, many years later, when Moses had grown up, he went out to visit his own people. Now, there's an interesting thing there about his own people. At this point, what the narrative tells us is that clearly Moses knew that he was Hebrew. Moses knew that he was Jewish because it says he went out to visit his own people, the Hebrews. So having been raised in the household of Pharaoh, he still knew that he was Jewish by nature and by descent. It says, and he saw how hard they were forced to work during his visit. He saw an Egyptian beating one of his fellow Hebrews. After looking in all directions to make sure no one was watching, Moses killed the Egyptian and hid the body in the sand. Now, at this point in the story, there are, again, tremendous opportunities for excuses to be made. Moses could have gone up on the scene of what was happening and said, you know, I was raised in Pharaoh's household, and so my loyalty should be to Pharaoh rather than the Hebrew Israelite. Or he could have gone and said, you know, the work that this Israelite is being forced to do actually benefits me because of my Egyptian status, and so I should just let him work harder and be mistreated, and it shouldn't be excuse me, that big of a deal. He could have come up with excuse after excuse. You know, one of the easy excuses, hey, this is between the two of them, not my business. Excuse after excuse could have been. But Moses makes a decision. Moses determines in his mind what needs to be done. He determines what the right thing to do is, and he sets aside all the excuses and makes a decision that is very, very controversial. He kills the Egyptian and builds and hides the body in the sand. The fascinating thing is that it tells us that he looked around to make sure no one was watching. But guess what? People found out. People knew. And eventually it comes back, and Moses winds up and becomes fearful for his life in the land of Egypt, becomes fearful of Pharaoh and what Pharaoh will do to him. And he winds up and he flees Egypt and settles in the land of Midian. And he becomes a shepherd in the household of a guy by the name of Jethro. And what's fascinating about these two seasons in Moses' life, each of them last about 40 years. His time in Egypt is about 40 years, and his time in Midian is about 40 years. But there's not a lot of book space given to them, to either one of them. So while he's in Midian, he marries a lady by the name of Zipporah. They have a couple of kids, and he tends flock for his father-in-law Jethro, and he's learning skills about being a shepherd. And then one day, Moses has one of the coolest experiences in the history of cool experiences. As he's tending the sheep, he comes to a place called Oreb, which is also called the Mountain of God. It's right there with Mount Sinai. And he comes upon this area, and he looks, and he sees this bush that is on fire, but yet it's not being consumed by the fire. I don't know about you, but that would be pretty cool. There'd be a part of me that I would wonder what I would do in that moment, because, you know, a bush that's on fire is supposed to be being burned up. And if the bush is on fire but not being burned up, something unusual is happening, and usually something unusual is bad. And so I'm probably better off to just keep my distance from this bush that's not being burned up. And plus, the last time I got involved in something unusual, I wound up and had to flee, and now I'm stuck here in this area as a shepherd, when before I used to live in a palace being treated like a king. So again, opportunities for excuses. But I love when Moses comes upon this bush that's burning but not being consumed by fire. I love how the author of Exodus tells us his response. Moses goes, "This is amazing." You think? Yeah, this is amazing. Why is that bush burning up? I must go see it. He's compelled to go see this bush. There's something unusual, something amazing happening. And Moses wants to be a part of something amazing. And so he says, I must. There's a part of him that he like, I can't not do this. And in all the excuses, in all the reasons he could give not to do it, he has to do this. And so he goes and he starts approaching the bush. And then the story gets a little more interesting, a little more amazing, because it says, when the Lord saw Moses coming to take a closer look, God called to him from the middle of the bush, Moses, Moses. Here I am, Moses replied. Now, I don't know about you, but I got to wonder about this moment. I got to wonder when this bush that's on fire but not being consumed all of a sudden talks to me. You know, I think for me at that moment, it would be a really good idea to hightail it away from Horeb and back to the household of Jethro and gather up as many of the sheep as I could. I don't care if I leave some of them at this point, but I'm taking what I can go and we're out of here, because this is weird. This bush is on fire, not being consumed, and now the bush is talking to me and it called me by name. I think I'd find plenty of reasons to take off. But Moses says, here I am. And I wonder if when Moses said, here I am, if he said it with confidence, you know, Moses, Moses, here I am. Or Moses, Moses, here I am. You know, I wonder if there's like supposed to be a question mark at the end of that. This dynamic is just fascinating. And so, you know, I think, here I am. The next question I would ask is, who are you and what do you want? You know, why is this bush not burning up? So the bush continues to talk to him. And he says, look, the cry of the people of Israel has reached me. And I have seen how harshly the Egyptians abused them. Now go, for I am sending you to Pharaoh. Now, this is a different Pharaoh. The Pharaoh that had ordered Moses to be killed has died by now and all that. But it's still the leader of Egypt. You must, just like he must go see the bush, you must lead my people Israel out of Egypt. This is a huge moment in Moses' life. God is asking Moses to go back to Egypt, the place that he fled because he was going to be killed for having killed an Egyptian. God is asking him to go to the household of Pharaoh, back into the palace that he was raised in as a boy. Though it's a different Pharaoh, it's the same history, the same dynamic. And you got to wonder, where is the original Pharaoh's daughter in all of this? He's asking him to go back and to go and find the lady who raised him in the palace, to go back to the place where he's supposedly going to be killed. I mean, he's asking him, and not only is he asking him to go back there, but he's asking them to go back there and lead the people of Israel out of Egypt. God says, the cry of my people I've heard, and I've seen how harshly they're being abused. Now, I'm sending you. You're the one. Their hopes are on you. You're the one that I'm going to use to lead my people out of Egypt. I got to tell you, I think I'd find a lot of reasons to be comfortable and safe and secure as a shepherd in Jethro's household in Midian. I think I could come up with a lot of reasons to not go back to Egypt. The biggest one is, dude, people there are trying to kill me. You know, I'm not going to go and do and be where people are trying to kill me. I just think that would be the biggest one. All the other factors that I could come up with, excuse after excuse, reason after reason. And if you think you could come up with excuses, if you think you could come up with reasons, guess what? You're not all that different than Moses. Because Moses came up with some reasons. What seemed like legitimate reasons to him, you know, and when we make excuses, don't they seem like legitimate reasons to us, you know? So, Moses asks what I think is a great question. He says, who am I to appear before Pharaoh? Who am I to lead the people of Israel out of Egypt? This is a great question because as we figure out what needs to be done and what needs to not be done and all that, it is important to have an accurate view of who we are. It's important to have an accurate view of the question, who am I to do what's being asked of me to do? Now, sometimes we ask this question because we get too high of an opinion of ourselves. Sometimes we get such a high opinion of ourselves that what needs to be done or what needs to not be done, we consider to be beneath us. Oh, I should never do that. That should be for these kinds of people. Now, again, it's a purely hypothetical situation, right? Sometimes, on the other end of it, we have too low of an opinion of ourselves. And we think God could never use someone like me to do something this big. We think God could never use someone like me to do something this significant. And so Moses asks this question. And isn't it amazing how we have an uncanny ability to turn legitimate questions into unreasonable excuses? God may have chosen Moses because he was raised in Pharaoh's household and would have had access to and an understanding of how things in the palace worked. He may have chosen Moses because he knew that Moses stood up for the injustice of the Israelite who was being abused by an Egyptian, and he was willing to take action against that harsh abuse. He may have chosen Moses to lead people because he had learned skills of how to lead sheep as a shepherd. He may have, for any of those reasons, he may have, for any combination of all three of those reasons, chosen Moses for this task. But the bottom line is that he makes it clear that he has chosen him for this task. And Moses asks a great question, but God gives a great answer. God says, I will be with you. And this is your sign that I am the one who has sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God at this very mountain. It's almost like God says, it doesn't matter who you are. What matters is that I will be with you. That what I have given you to do, I will prepare you for and I will provide for you in and all of that. And I will make it possible for you to do. No matter who you are, what I have given you to do, I will make sure you can do. And not only will I make sure you can do it, but I will be with you as you do it. God promises his presence. And then he gives him a sign. And this will be the sign. And here's the fascinating thing about the sign. When does the sign happen? Back up one slide for me, Kristen. When does the sign happen? When you have brought the people out of Egypt. He doesn't get a sign right away, other than the promise of I'll be with you. The sign comes after Moses does what God wants him to do. After Moses goes to Egypt, after Moses goes to Pharaoh, after Moses leads the people out of Egypt, after Moses leads the people to where God wants them to be. It says, when you have brought the people out of Egypt, then you will worship God at this very mountain. The place where the bush was on fire but not consumed. The place where the bush talked to you. And not only will it be you this time, but it will be all the people of Israel that will worship God at this very mountain. But the sign will come after you do what I want you to do. So Moses isn't quite done coming up with excuses. Moses kind of continues down this who am I insecurity line and says, you know, if I do this, the people aren't going to believe me. They're going to reject me because of history and stuff like that, and they're not going to believe that you came and spoke to me. And so God comes back to Moses again and says, God replied to Moses, I am who I am. Say this to the people of Israel. I am has sent me to you. Now this is important because this is, God gets really, really personal. God uses first person and says, I am. And the phrase I am there is very, very significant in the Jewish language. It is clearly a reference to God. And no other possibility other than God. And so God is telling Moses to tell the people of Israel that this is clearly God that has sent him to the people of Israel. He says Yahweh, and the word Yahweh there comes from a phrase, a Hebrew phrase that means to be. And so God uses the first person of to be and says, I am, and it encompasses the being of God, which is just fascinating in the Hebrew language. The God of your ancestors. And then he gives some history. The God of Abraham, whom I made the promise to for land and to be a blessing and to make your name great. The God of Isaac, who was Abraham's son, who Abraham was ready to sacrifice, and then God intervened, provided the lamb, and then made a promise to Isaac. And the God of Jacob has sent me to you. Now, Jacob, God made promises to as well. And in the last promise that God made Jacob, if you were here, or if you grew up in church, what happened in the last promise that God made Jacob? He said, no longer will you be called Jacob, which means supplanter, but now you will be called Israel, which means God will provide. And so Moses is being told to go lead the people of Israel with the reminder of the promise that God made to Jacob when he changed his name to Israel. This is my eternal name. My name to remember for all generations. God is stepping in and saying, tell the people, this is a God thing. Tell the people that it is for now and for always, and that I am God, and that I am has sent you, and that I will always be with you. And this isn't just a now thing, but it's a forever thing. And so, we at some point would think that, again, it would kind of start to eliminate Moses' excuses, but not quite. Because in response to this, Moses says, well, what if they won't believe me or listen to me? What if they say, the Lord never appeared to you? Well, one of the things that happens here, which is incredibly, incredibly fascinating, God tells Moses, take the shepherd's staff that's in your hand and throw it on the ground. And he throws it on the ground and it turns into a snake. And he says, now, pick it up. Dude, I'm not picking up that snake. That snake might bite me. That snake might be poisonous. Again, excuses. I mean, take this for what it's worth. It's a legitimate deal if a snake's poisonous and it bites you. Well, and sometimes that's what we do. Sometimes we use the word excuses tightly because we make excuses. We rationalize and we justify. But sometimes we use it loosely because sometimes there are legitimate reasons not to do something. Don't touch the hot stove or you'll get burned. Well, the bush didn't burn up, but I'm going to touch that stove anyway. You know, so sometimes there's legitimate reasons not to do things. But he says, what if they won't believe me? And he says, throw it down. And he says, now take your hand and put it inside your cloak. Now take it out. And when Moses takes his hand out, his hand is full of leprosy. And he says, now put your coat back in, or put your hand back in your cloak. Now take it out again. And the leprosy was gone. It's like, okay, how much more excuse eliminating stuff do you need me to do here? You would think that after going through all this, it would do it. But Moses, in typical excuse-making fashion, says, oh, Lord. And that's why I think it was, oh, Lord. I don't think it was, oh, Lord. It's, oh, Lord. You know, my hand, the snake, the snow, you know. I'm not very good with words. Never have been, and not now. Even though you have spoken to me. Notice that. Even though you have spoken to me. Even though you've made it clear. Even though you've eliminated excuse after excuse. Even though. And the blue word there is though. I don't know what happened, but it's I did it, so it has to be somebody else's fault. But I did it. Yeah. You know what? The light in the room must have been a little bit dim, and I hadn't slept well the night before, so I got a little bit sleepy and missed the blue. He said, even though you have spoken to me, I'm not good with words. Never have been. Won't be any different now. But even though you have spoken to me, I still get tongue-tied, and my words get tangled. So, in other words, I'm not the right person for this job. And so God, in reply, says, who makes a person's mouth? I love this. Who decides whether people speak or do not speak, hear or do not hear, see or do not see? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go. I will be with you as you speak, and I will instruct you in what to say. Now notice, when God first told Moses, now go, it was now go with a period at the end. Notice this time, now go has an exclamation point at the end. And I wonder if the frustration is starting to build for God a little bit. You know, if God eliminates this excuse, someone comes up with another one. And then there's this, and it's this back and forth of excuse and elimination and excuse and excuse and elimination and all that. And God gets a little frustrated. And I have to wonder if when he asks those questions, if there isn't a tone of exasperation. It's like, and Moses said, oh, Lord. I think he looked back and goes, oh, Moses. You know? Who decides this? You know? I think it's almost like a parent that says to their child, no more excuses. Just go do what I told you to do. I've told you, just go do it. With the exclamation point at the end. And so then Moses says, Lord, please send anyone else. So, I mean, Moses isn't making excuses anymore. He's just flat out saying, I don't do this. Send anyone else. I don't care who you send, just don't make it be me. And the narrative tells us that if we suspected God was getting frustrated, now it says that God's anger burned against Moses, which I think is fascinating again. God's anger burned against Moses, but God first talked to him in a bush that was burning but wasn't being consumed. And now I think God is getting consumed with anger at Moses. I think this is fascinating usages of words in the story. And so God, in his anger, says to Moses, "All right, what about your brother Aaron? Aaron the Levite. I know he speaks well. Aaron will be your spokesman to the people. Aaron will..." Man, somebody fell asleep at the wheel again. He will be your mouthpiece. And you will stand in the place of God for him, telling him what to say. It's like God says, "Okay, fine. If your words get tangled and you don't trust me to untangle your words and all that, what about your brother Aaron? Aaron speaks good. So let's let Aaron speak for you. But you're going to stand in the place of God." You're going to stand in the place of God telling him what to say. Which makes me wonder, if Moses can tell Aaron what to say, why can't Moses just say it himself? So now he's going to stand in the place of God. So Moses went back home to Jethro, his father-in-law. "Please let me return to my relatives in Egypt. I don't even know if they are still alive. I don't even..." "Go in peace," Jethro replied. "Before Moses left Midian, the Lord said to him, 'Return to Egypt, for all those who wanted to kill you have died.'" It's almost like God says, all this back and forth, all this excuse, there was never a threat to you in Egypt anyway. We went through all this back and forth, and had you just done what I said the first time and all that, we would have avoided this whole thing. Because all of those who had wanted to kill you in Egypt have died anyway. So Moses took his wife and sons, put them on a donkey, and headed back to the land of Egypt. In his hand, he carried the staff of God. Same staff. It was the shepherd's staff that God turned into a snake and back into a... It was the shepherd's staff that he used to lead the sheep. But now as Moses sets out to do what God has given him to do, now when Moses has finally set aside, and finally when all the excuses have been eliminated, and Moses decides to do what God has given him to do and asked him to do, now it's the staff of God. So Moses sets out on the journey. And Moses returns to the land of Egypt. All of the excuses are gone. All of the reasons, what seemed like legitimate reasons to Moses. "There are people there trying to kill me. I don't have credibility among the nation of Israel. There's this whole Pharaoh dynamic. I don't speak very good." All of those things which seemed as legitimate reasons to Moses, God looked on as excuses and eliminated every single one. There are times for each and every one of us where we face the decision to do what needs to be done or to not do what we know we shouldn't do. And when it comes to those times and when it comes to those things, I think the best thing to do is to say, "No more excuses. Do what needs to be done and don't do what we shouldn't do." Let me pray for us and we'll wrap up this part of our time. We'll roll the preview video. When the preview video is over, we'll jump into the annual meeting. If you need to take a quick stretch break, certainly feel free to do that. Or if for some reason you need to leave, then certainly that's what you need to do as well. So, okay. Dear God, thank you for today. Thank you for this time together. Thank you for this incredible story of Moses and and how you moved him from being filled with excuses to being one of the most significant figures in Israel history. We pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.